Ron and Anian.
California's got some power shutdowns going on, and here to report about it, we've got John Perley Huffman. He's a contributing editor from Car and Driver magazine.
People with Teslas, if they were taking power off the grid, they didn't have a way to charge their cars.
You can't see it. It's electric. You gotta feel it. It's electric.
The Car Doctor.
We create this technology, and then we create an electric car. It's a great, you know, it works. It does what it's supposed to do. And now all of a sudden, we don't have any way to charge it because the electric utility is having financial troubles.
Captain, we're losing power in the warp engine.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Hey, it's time to start your engines. Hello and welcome. Ron and Anian, the Car Doctor, here at 855-560-9900. Here to take your calls and answer your questions, whatever they might be. If you've got a problem, make your problem my problem. That's what the Car Doctor does and has done for the past 28 years here on radio as we motor forward and try and solve and fix all of America's broken cars. And I guess around the world, I have to revise that one of these days in my head, that we're here for everybody, and you know, via the internet and streaming and all the different ways we come to you now, podcasting and live radio, because we do have 80 some odd live affiliates all across this great nation of ours and growing each and every day. Let's without any further ado, I was going to have a little opening monologue I wanted to talk about. It can wait. Let's open the garage doors right away. Let's get over to talk to Billy in Virginia, 13 Ford Escape. Welcome to the Car Doctor, Billy. How can I help you?
Hi, Ron. Appreciate you taking my call.
Thank you, sir.
I've had a check engine light started coming on about 2 months ago, and my local mechanic guy, he said it was my turbo.
Okay.
And so they put some kind of a sensor on it, and that cost $850. And it stayed off for about 5 hours, and then came back on.
Okay. And it's
then it just has no power.
All right. Have you taken it back to him for additional diagnosis?
Yeah, I'm supposed to take it back to him, and they worked on it one time all day, and he said I just don't know. He said that the mechanic says just got me puzzles, and I told him that I'd heard that they had a limited recall, that it was in the wiring. And so, you know, I'm dealing with cancer right now, and it's kind of hard for me to get it back to him real quick.
Gotcha.
And so, you know, I'm at that part where I'm a paint contractor, and if I pull my utility with me, one time I just about didn't get up a mountain.
Right.
And it wasn't that long of a mountain, but by the time I got close to the top, it started running hot. I said, this is not good.
Billy, is he your regular mechanic, this guy?
Yes.
This is the 2-liter turbo?
2-liter, I think so, yes.
Okay. You've been with this guy a while as far as being your mechanic? He's had successful repairs for you in the past?
Oh, yeah. It's everything to this right here.
Okay. Understand what's going on. They've got a bunch of safety measures and override devices in this system so that if and when something fails, there's a logical, like anything else, there's hopefully a logical flow of diagnosis. What I'd really need to know, what I'd really be curious to know, is what fault code does this have? All right, because that'll tell me, you know, is it a P0234 overboost? Is it a P0299 lack of power? Possibly showing a problem with the wastegate or the turbo itself. So it's each diagnosis would kind of take us down a different path. So let me make an assumption. Let me make an assumption because this is a lax power. Let me say it's a P0299. All right.
Okay.
So write that down. Let's say we're chasing a 299 fault. All right.
Okay.
One of the things we can do, all right, and it's simple with this particular car, is hook up a scan tool, go for a ride, all right?
Uh-huh.
He can look at fuel rail pressure, actual and desired, right on the scan tool. So if, you know, that because a 299, if that's what it is, can be created by other things. It's lack of power. All right, or it's lack of boost, being failure to achieve desired boost, I think, is the actual technical explanation. So a lot of things can make an engine not reach power. This could be low fuel pressure, and the flow chart will never take you through that. This could be restricted exhaust. All right? So sometimes in diagnosis, what everybody's got to understand is tell me what's good. All right? Tell me what's good, I'll tell you what's bad. I went to and I'll tell you the story this way. I went to class this week on ADAS, automated driver assist systems, and when I was there, one of the instructors pulled me aside and he said, "Hey, I've got a client with a problem car. He was setting an airbag fault, and he says I was getting ready to call you, and the guy doesn't know what to do. He's changed all these parts." And my answer to him was, "Well, but what did he test?" And he said, no, you don't understand. He changed all these parts. And I said, "Yeah, but what did he test?" You know, in my universe, new means never, ever worked. And I say it all the time. And I explained to him, I said, "Listen, have the guy take the system out of the vehicle in his head. Take it apart. It's an air pump, a diverter valve, an on-off control, and an O2 sensor to tell whether or not airflow is being achieved out of the pump." And I realize this isn't your problem, Billy, but just, you know, an example of diagnosis. And I said, have him look at everything. You know, what's there to be considered? How do you know he doesn't have a spider web built up in front of the air inlet on the divert valve or on the pump and it can't get airflow? Tell me how you tested the system. That's what I want to know. He looked at me and he said, "You know, you're right." He goes, I got caught up in, he changed this, and right. Tell me what he tested. Tell me what's good. I'll tell you what's bad. It'll be whatever's left over. Sometimes that's how you got to approach it. There's just no other way. So,
it's,
you know,
definitely a power issue.
Right. So in a low power issue like yours, I want to look at fuel pressure. Now, you're fortunate in the days that, you know, in the old days, we'd have to hook up a gauge and go for a ride by rail and look at it. Well, you can do it on a scan tool. Where is it? Where's fuel trim go when this happens? I'd kind of like to know if that stays within normal. You know, hooking up and looking at back manifold vacuum for restricted exhaust, which is kind of hard on a turbo. Maybe we can look at, I believe this is going to be this should be a mass air car. There should be a vacuum PID, I believe, in this that it will look at. Does it look normal? Do we have any signs of restricted exhaust? And then, you know, the actuator is, then the issue becomes, do we have a sticking wastegate? And he could apply a handheld vacuum pump to the wastegate actuator, override the computer, apply vacuum to it while he's driving it. Does it pick up power? If it changes, that tells us that either the vacuum supply to the wastegate is an issue or there's a problem with the wastegate itself. Is it sticking, binding, whatever?
Okay.
So there's things to do here. It's tell me what the fault is. All right, and understand, and this is what I said to the gentleman at the class Wednesday night. I said, you know, that fault code, P0, I think it was P0402, there's specific things that have to happen to create that code.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't fall into the trap, and I know you got a lot going on, and I, you know, I wish you the best, brother, but don't fall into the trap of, you know, well, it's got a wastegate code or it's got a low power code. It must be the turbo. It must be, you know, it could be a lot of things. You know, one of the things I used to tell Mike when I was teaching, it was woulda, coulda, shoulda. You know, I would have done this, I should have done that, and I could have come out this way. Woulda, coulda, shoulda.
That's right.
And you know, so we got to diagnose. That's all right. Listen, is it a hardcore failure? Is the car broken right now?
No, it'll run fine. And it's just the per mile gallon went down by about 3 miles to a gallon, and it went from 21 something down to 18.
Right.
And it's just power. But when he when he would reset the stuff, I mean, I thought, oh my God, this is he fixed it. And because it run twice to what it would be normally.
So the adaptives, it sounds like the adaptive, either fuel trim or one of the other adaptives for the way the vehicle is running is encroaching its high parameter or its high limit, and it's limiting power as a result.
Uh-huh.
All the more
so
reason.
So it could all be in a fuel deal.
Right. You know, do we have a fuel pressure issue?
Okay.
All right. Understand, a turbocharged engine is working under such high pressure in the cylinder. If it runs low on fuel, it will limit turbo apply because now you're going to run, best way I can explain it is the fuel that's in there is going to ignite quicker because there's less of it, and you can do engine damage and have detonation issues.
Right.
So there's a reason and a rationale. Let's go back and look at and see, do we have fuel pressure basics? Tell me what's good, I'll tell you what's bad. All right?
Okay.
So, hey, Billy, good luck
all
to
right.
you on all fronts, brother. Yeah, yes, sir. Listen,
okay.
We'll say a prayer for you. You take good care. All righty.
All right, thanks.
You're very welcome. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We'll be back right after this.
Whether it's a little red Corvette or a Yugo, you've come to the right place to get that car fixed. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. Now, back to Ron.
Just a reminder, coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're going to be joined by John Hannigan. He is the director for Ford Motor Company, Global Aftermarket Director. And John's going to be stopping back. We've had John on the show before, talking about some of the changes and improvements to the diesel line of Fords that Ford is making, and as well as with their, you know, with their parts for Motorcraft, talking about some of the improvements they've made along the way and how they're now making specific things available to help support the diesel in the aftermarket world. So we're looking forward to that, too. That'll be around the bottom of the hour. Right now, let's get over to the busy phones. Let's go over and talk to Paul from Long Island, 13 Ford Explorer. Paul, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hi, Ron. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I don't know where to start on this one. It's an intermittent backup camera and very intermittent. It seems like there's no set pattern that we can figure as of yet.
Okay. Just once in a while, you've got it in reverse and the camera works or doesn't work.
Right.
Okay. So let's talk about the basics. Obviously, you know, I'm going to tell you to just do a scan. I'm sure there'll be nothing there, but tell me what's good. I'll tell you what's bad. You know,
okay.
If within a reasonable amount of time after the problem happens, do a complete module scan. And most scan tools today will have that option. You know, Snap-ons do, Launch does, to name a few. So let's go out and do a complete module scan and see what's there. And, you know, obviously print or write everything down. This is not something you can fix with OBD2 because OBD2 is emissions only, right?
That's what I was afraid of.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
So this is something we need a year make model specific scanner to go in and look at. So that's number one. Number two, fuse number 34 for the BCM, and I believe it's in the BCM actually. It's attached to or in and around the BCM if I remember right. But fuse 34, if that fuse is okay, and chances are it is, you may want to, and understand you may do some resets by doing this, but it's just part of the game today. Pull the fuse out. Look at it. I don't think there will be, but just how clean is the fuse? Any signs of corrosion? Any signs of burn marks? Any signs of high resistance? I've seen fuses do some flaky things, and I'm getting in the habit on intermittents just looking at fuses now. And obviously
okay.
Look at the socket that the fuse sits in. All right?
Okay.
If the fuse is okay, you've got to pull down that panel. The backup camera sits above the license plate, right? So that back interior panel's got to come down. And we're looking for the connector right at the rear video camera, all right?
Okay.
You're going to find a power and a ground. Obviously, make sure you've got power and ground. If you leave your meter hooked up to that, checking for power and ground, and you start to wiggle and massage the harness and beat it up and, you know, manipulate the harness any which way you can, does it maintain power and ground? Chances are it will.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
But, you know, we're just trying to find an intermittent. Here's the hard thing, okay? If the power and grounds are okay, and here's a classic case of where wiring in the 194 side marker bulb you always hear me talk about would be a great thing. So I could, you know, and it'll actually work, right? You could look in the rearview mirror. Is the bulb lit? If the bulb's lit and the camera's out, it's going to answer my next question. All right. My next question is, the next wire I would want to go look at is, and we're going to play alphabet soup here, Paul, in that, you know, the next thing I want to look at is I want to go look at the LIN wire. LIN wire on the camera on this truck is the local independent network. See, you thought it was a car. it's just a giant computer with wheels and an engine and a payment book. All right. So we want to go look at the LIN wire. All right. If you disconnect the camera, there should be voltage on that LIN wire with the key in the on position. That's the communication data line from the body computer, from the BCM to the camera. Okay?
Okay.
If there is voltage there, keep the camera disconnected and disconnect the APM. You know what the APM is, don't you?
No.
The accessory protocol interface module. Don't you love this business? All right.
Yeah, I love it.
It's just, okay, disconnect that and check the two wires from the camera to the APM just to make sure there's any shorts or opens, all right, and shorts to ground and that kind of stuff. If there aren't, then it's going to be a backup camera. It's that simple.
Okay.
Backup cameras are very common. They tend to go bad.
Okay. But
that's the long-winded around the block how to do it explanation of how to check it. I get this call a lot, both at the shop and here.
And I can go back and replay it on your replay.
Right, you can do, and that's an excellent point. And I don't mention that, I failed to mention that enough, that's my fault. But you can, for everybody, you can go and take this show. This show will be up within the next 2 hours after we're off air. It gets sent up to the server for podcast distribution, and this is approaching the bottom of the first hour on whatever today is.
Right,
today's
perfect date,
and you know, you can kind of walk back through it again. All right, sir? So
thank you very much. Have a good weekend.
You're very welcome. You too. Your cars aren't getting any simpler, right? It's just, but you know what? It's a very exciting time. I'm going to hear a lot of groans from this, but it's a very exciting time to be fixing cars. It really is. All right. The posers are going away. You can't be a pretender in this business anymore. And it's sort of entertaining to sit in the back of the room and watch the show going on. And, you know, I said this to someone this morning at breakfast. I was having a breakfast. We were the mechanical group. And, you know, where's the business going? And I said, I just don't know. Where are we going to be in 5 or 7 or 8 or 10 years? And that's the big question, because it's getting to the point of cost of technology is trying to keep up. And it'll always be here, but what's it going to look like? And that's the ultimate question. So, I'll be here as long as I can, God willing. He keeps me fixing cars, keeps me healthy. Hey, coming up next, John Hannigan from Ford Motor Company, the Global Aftermarket Director, talking about Ford diesels and all points and parts in between. So you want to come back for that, I'll be there with him. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Don't go away. Meaning the Car Doctor. Diesel is a word that strikes all sorts of images in everybody's mind. And Ford Motor Company has done a great job of presenting the diesel engine on the road today in all sorts and fashions, from cars to medium to light to heavy-duty truck, the entire parameter. There are 1.4 million Power Stroke diesels on the road today. And that says a lot about how Ford has, you know, become the leader in the diesel market that they are. And we thought to discuss it further and talk about some of the innovation that's going on there, we would once again welcome back John Hannigan. He is the Global Aftermarket Director for Ford Motor Company. And we're happy to have him. John, welcome back, sir.
Thank you for having me, Ron. I really appreciate being part of your show today.
Well, John, it's always a good conversation. 1.4 million Power Stroke diesels on the road. That's quite an accomplishment.
It is. It's a great history for Ford. And what's nice, too, is our newest offering, which is a 2020 offering for the Ford Super Duty. Just got a refreshed third engine 6.7 liter Power Stroke engine, Ron. And it's got best-in-class horsepower at 475 torque pounds and best-in-class torque with 1,050 hauling capability. So it's up there, and it's had a nice introduction, and it's doing very well for us with our dealers.
Yeah, that could probably pull a few buildings, 1,050 foot pounds of torque.
We haven't tried that yet.
You know, but, it's
an idea for our commercial, though, Ron.
John, I got to tell you, I always think back, a little off the subject here, I always think back, I had a customer with a Ford Excursion, a diesel Excursion, a Power Stroke, a 7.3, going way back, right? And he brought it in one day, and we fixed it for the diesel, and his complaint was it didn't have enough power to do anything, and it had snowed that day at the shop, and my plow fit his truck, and I didn't have my truck that day, and I said, well, Joe said it. I asked Joe, he says, yeah, go ahead, plow the shop. I have to tell you, once you snow plow with a diesel, if you have you'll never plow with anything else, because boy, does that diesel put out torque and power. It just keeps going like nothing I've ever experienced.
Very consistent and very strong, to
your
point.
Just like, wow. The Ford 6.7 liter Power Stroke that's on the Super Duty trucks, you're now offering remanufactured turbos. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, the remanufactured turbos, what's really interesting about that is the first to market that anyone's done that. And it's actually remanufactured in the United States, Ron, which is really important, of course.
Of course.
It exceeds their engineering rigorous OEM test requirements. It's got a high-performance bearing in there for increased durability within these engines, too, because these are strong engines that last a long, long time. I mean, some diesels go over a total million miles. It's the only remanufactured 6.7 turbocharger that's got the OEM balancing techniques, which really yields lower noise, vibration, and harshness ratings within the cabs and the feel of the actual ride in the vehicle. And most importantly, because we've always wanted to make sure we've got the shop owner, especially PSN members, back, and the technician, it offers a 2-year unlimited warranty with labor included and no commercial exceptions, Ron.
And that's kind of unheard of when it comes to a diesel, right, John? That's one of the best, if not the best, warranty in the business.
It is the best, and it shows the confidence we've got in our product.
With a diesel, you've got to be right spot on the money, because diesels, they don't tolerate... What's the word I'm looking for? Not abuse. They don't tolerate variations in tolerance in a lot of areas. And let's use that as a segue, right? Clean fuel is so important for a diesel. Most fuel filters are round, but the 6.7 I was reading is now a flat panel design fuel filter. What are the benefits?
Well, just to circle back for a minute, a single particle of dirt, Ron, as you know, can damage the entire system, and then water gets in there and freezes inside the system, which can block the entire flow of fuel into the engine, which really causes serious damage. Motorcraft's high-performance filter media, it's able to filter particles as small as 4 microns. A typical oil filter is like 30 microns. This is 4. That's how much of an improvement this is. The air bleed orifices assure no reduction in the performance of the filter, improve the longevity, and then you've got no fuel pump noise on top of that. There's 98% water removal rate, 98%, Ron, compared to the aftermarket, which runs around 65 to 82%. Again, the OE level of performance is so critical. And then the Motorcraft parts are designed, again, the OE form, fit, and function, which is so important for our installers today. I remember when I was one at one time and how important that was. And it's fully backed, again, by the 2-year unlimited mileage warranty and the labor, again, included and no commercial exceptions.
And it's putting you guys out in the front of the field. And for those of you just tuning in, we're talking to John Hannigan, the Global Aftermarket Director for Ford Motor Company. We're talking about the changes and the improvements that are being made in the world of diesel, specifically some of the Ford product that's out there, as well as some of the offerings for replacement parts. The 3-liter Power Stroke, John, that's in the F-150, that truck gets 30 miles to the gallon on the highway?
It does. It's our first diesel offering in an F-150. On top of that, Ron, and you know, the F-150 has been the number one selling truck for over 42 years straight, and we definitely want to continue to have that leadership position. And this is one of the ways we feel we really can do this. Now, that puppy has 440 pounds of torque in just 1,750 RPMs. On top of that, the Power Stroke can tow up to 11,400 pounds. Really conquering some big jobs, the F-150 can.
I could bring my lunchbox to work.
You go, you can. And you get 30 miles to the gallon. To your point, it's got the engine side. The engine in it is a little different. It's a compacted graphite engine. They call it the CGI, which is a deep skirt engine block with aluminum cylinder heads for the weight savings there, which really, really has strength as well as the lightness to it, if you will, reduction in weight, if you will, to try to help contribute to that that great fuel economy. It's got a large turbocharger, which takes care of high airflow to maximize the power, again, around that torque capability. It's got forged steel, fully counterweighted crankshaft in it, which is a new design for us for strength and durability for our crankshaft capability. And then the high-pressure common, you know, rail fuel injection has got really the good power and fuel consumption in emission control.
So you've
this is a very impressive offering, and we're really proud of it, Ron.
You've really redesigned it from the bottom up.
Yes, sir.
Inside out. So it's not just one part, it's all the parts. Everything has been improved upon and made better.
We got to do that to stay number one.
Yeah, to be competitive like that, sure, yeah.
Yep.
So then let me ask you the ugly word. Start-stop technology. Rumor has it that this particular setup is going to have start-stop technology on a diesel, John?
Yeah, on a diesel truck on top of it, Ron. Listen, what you've heard about it, give this one a good look, because the start-stop technology on this offering's top-notch. It's got it's all about improving the fuel economy, back to that 30 miles per gallon. So the start-stop contributes to that capability, technology. The biodiesel capability really offers the fuel flexibility and convenience we need. It's got an very intelligent oil life monitor system inside of it to help ensure we got regular maintenance, because you have to do that with a diesel engine.
Right.
It's an oil-based system, so we've got to make sure it's maintained. And on top of that, this is what makes it different, Ron. It's got a smart charging alternator, which really helps provide consistent, reliable charging to improve fuel economy and battery life on top of that as well. So that's new this year as well, that adds to that start-stop technology capability.
I got to get my hands on one of these. It's interesting. You always think a diesel is, you know, noisy and it smells and it clatters. And so we had a customer in the shop 2 weeks ago with I think it was like a 17 or an 18 diesel F-250 vehicle, and it was a diesel, and it was running, and I couldn't even tell. You know, it was so quiet. Like, you really had to listen now. And if the newer stuff is even quieter, you're not going to be able to tell the difference anymore. It's not going to be anywhere near.
It's really something to see, I got to tell you. So I was there in a couple of the labs when they were testing them out, and it's really impressive as far as we've come.
I can imagine. Hey, John, it's always great when we get together. We got to do this more often. Where can the listeners go for more information?
Well, I agree, Ron. I'd love to do this as often as you'd like. You can get more information on motorcraft.com, but really the hub to go to is fordparts.com, because it's got a complete catalog offering in there, and you can search by VIN, you can search by model, keyword, or part number.
Let me tell you, fordparts.com, once you get used to it, you can't live without it. I've told more than a few stories here on air. Most recently, I had an 06 F-250 that I needed the little purge valve coming off the back of the intake manifold.
Yep.
I called my dealer, and my dealer's talking to me, and he's going, well, and I'm like, he says, go to the, and I said, let me go to this web. I went to fordparts.com. He gave, what stunned me, John, and I know we're off topic here, I'm sorry. He gave me a reference number. I typed that reference number into fordparts.com. It brought me to the same page he's looking at, and he said, is it number 3? Yeah. Okay, I'll order you that. It was that simple.
That's great.
I went, wow, look at this. Instead of, you know, the poke and hope, and I hope we get the right part tomorrow, really, really, really made it, you know, that much easier. So, you guys are doing a heck of a job up there.
Thanks, Ron. The images we keep adding to the site, too, as well, really help you make sure you get the right part the first time, which is so critical.
It's so critical because it saves downtime. Hey, John, I got to go, but again, thank you, sir. Thanks for being part of the Car Doctor family today, and we're always glad to have you guys. You come back anytime.
Thank you, Ron. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome,
sir.
You take good care.
Okay.
I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We are back right after this. Welcome back. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor. Thanks again to John from Ford Motor Company. We appreciate him taking the time today. Lots of good stuff, right? Diesel stuff changes all the time, and diesel they've got to stay so on top of because of what we ask it to do out in the universe in terms of getting us around and moving our product and ourselves. That, you know, it's a big deal. So, you know, always good to stay on top of that. Let's do a quick piece of email. I've been wanting to get to this one. This comes to us from Casey. Casey is in Smithtown, New York. Hey, Ron, I've got a 2018 Subaru Outback Limited 2.5, and I'm going to paraphrase some of this. I purchased the vehicle new October 2017. Since day one, I parked it in my garage, and I smelled antifreeze. I look all over. I don't see anything, nothing on the garage floor. Before I brought it in for the first oil change at 500 miles, I noticed the coolant tank has barely anything in it when it's cold, way below the low level mark. I mentioned it to the dealer and they just said top it off and the smell is normal. Car now has 11,000 miles on it and I still have the same problem. I thought the heater core, but I pulled back carpeting into the glove box and saw nothing, and there's no steam residue on the windshield when you put it on the frost. I told the dealer three separate times. They pressure tested it and keep saying everything is normal. I asked them where the coolant is going. They said it might be evaporating. I gotta tell you, coolant doesn't evaporate. I'm gonna jump in here for a second. You know, antifreeze is basically, to a large degree, an oil-based solution. It doesn't evaporate. Pour a small puddle of antifreeze on your garage floor. Come back 3 months later, it's still sitting there. It's an oil-based solution, if you want to think of it like that, and it just doesn't really evaporate. I don't, you know, maybe the liquid water portion of it will, and but not like what you're going through here. I don't see that it sounds like you're going through some real serious amount. I never had a car do this before. I contacted Subaru of America, SOA. Do you ever think about a Subaru of America change their name? It could be SOS, which sometimes you need if you're a Subaru. Suggested I bring it to a different dealer, so I did. This dealer gave me a loaner car, which is nice, and they still have it, which means you should now become an Uber service. Service manager called me and said they found nothing, but they were going to do an overnight pressure test. SOA called and said Subaru tech support team is working with the dealer to come up with a solution. Did you ever hear anything like this on a late model Subaru? No, but, I have. I have seen this as a recurring problem over the years, and obviously head gasket comes to mind because it seems that if it's disappearing, where is it going? And I have seen and heard of this particular problem, but I have not seen or found that Subaru has come up with a solution. My question is, why is this so hard to diagnose? You know, this is still, let's put a dye additive in the coolant, run the vehicle. Do we see signs of that dye stain anywhere? With a black light, are we seeing it seep out somewhere? And if that's not the case, and if it's really going down, you know, I'm going to start to question: do I have a head gasket issue, and do I have a seepy head gasket, particularly cold? Although Subarus aren't known to do this at such a young age, you know, I still question: do they have issues? And you know what? They're probably the third or fourth car company that are having issues right now with head gaskets, if this pans out, that I'm aware of, that we're not really talking about, so I'm not going to talk about it. But suffice it to say that I still think this is an easy solution to diagnose, and by all means, Casey, if you can, keep me in the loop. I'd like to know what the final solution is with this. We'll announce it up here on air, but I'm betting head gasket. 855-560-9900. I'm Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor, coming back right after this. Yeah, I'm shaking like a leaf, and it ain't no wonder. Drive like lightning. Hey, welcome back. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor. I want to talk a little bit about, well, sometimes repairs are simple. It's just the diagnostic routine. This comes to us from the October issue of All Data News from the folks over at alldata.com. 2007 Ford Expedition came into the shop. They've got a blog about this. The vehicle had almost 200,000 miles on it, and the power windows were inoperative. So they could hear, they'd say they're all down about 2 inches, and they wouldn't go up or down. The customer stated they could hear a buzzing sound from the master control switch. The shop replaced the master switch with an OEM part, but the symptom remained. Now, one of the nice things that AllData has is they have a Tech Assist line, right? So the Tech Assist consultant from AllData suggested checking for power at the main wire to the shop, and they found that the test lamp would barely light. And they next used a power probe. A power probe is a device that has its own power and ground. They applied power to that pin, and the windows worked. So they were then able to approve that, you know, tell me what's good. The switch is good. The window motor is good, and the window regulator assembly itself is good. So we know it's not the window. It's the wires leading up. Together, The tech assist consultant from AllData and the technician traced the circuits in a wiring diagram from AllData Repair. They found that the harness had a broken wire under the driver's door sill plate and only had a few strands left, which allowed minimum voltage through the circuit. There you go. Here's an example about I always tell you about. Use a round headlight, 6-7 amps of current across the circuit to see if it'll light the light. It would tell you whether or not it's got enough to make all the electrons flow to make the device or whatever it is that it wants to operate, operate. Courtesy of alldata.com. That one comes to us from their AllData news this month. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, reminding you, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless.